Thank you very much, Olumi. I was having goosebumps as you were reading all of those things. These are senior people. Yeah, I mean, thank you very much for joining this session, and we're looking forward to some exciting conversation. For our audience, if you share my goosebumps, please leave your comments. You know, then let them hear you and feel your love. Yeah. So thank you very much again. And just like Folmi had said, unconventional insurance in an emerging market, right? But before we even go into all of that, I wanted to ask, because you know, one thing that I've seen that is common between, the four panelists and even Folmi and myself, is that we all don't have a background in insurance. Right. So first of, is it that the movement of the change is going to come from the outside? And then also, why insurance? Maybe we'll start with mutual. Why insurance? How did insurance come into play? That's such a remote part to go into.
So I'm just gonna go ahead and say, for me, we stumbled on insurance, right? We didn't set out to basically do insurance. As Folumi said, we're working on a whole different setup called Motige. And essentially, it was on the back of that that we tried to create very innovative products in terms of pay-as-you-drive sort of models based on the data that we collected of the devices in the vehicles. Now, what we noticed was, we thought we had a very good product. But then the market, when we took it to the market, there was no adoption, basically, right? We were too early on. And so we were very curious about that observation. And what we decided to do is do a survey and try and figure out why were people not onboarding with the new product, right? And what we found out was very interesting. One, most of the people that we're targeting, again, in the mobility space are, riders, the traditional Okada, Boda guys. And they're very unconventional, so to say. And of core interest to them through the survey that we did was essentially that they care more about themselves than they care about the asset we're trying to sort of provide an insurance cover for, right? So it was a light bulb moment for us, like, oh, okay, cool. Then we need to shift focus totally and, see how, what kind of challenges are they having? What existing solutions are there? And on top of that, how can we then come in and create something that resonates with them, right? So for us, it was just sort of like a stumble upon kind of solution. And we put the business and actually purely focus now on providing a personal accident cover. So that's sort of like how we came about with Motisha for us.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's quite interesting. So Nabi, you've been on our podcast, so I guess I know kind of how you came into the insurance space. But It's still remote, like.
So I also stumbled across insurance because I had a personal situation where we had to lodge. It was a traumatic life experience, and being an entrepreneur, entrepreneurs' needs are very much ignored across the board in the financial services sector. If we look at banking or lending. It's very much designed for the corporate world by the corporate world. So when I encountered this problem and lodged a claim and it all got rejected, then it got me curious enough to dabble in insurance. So we started off in 2017 with a really big vision. The product has changed and evolved over the last few years to what it is today. The vision from day one was, how do we make insurance transparent? How do we make insurance simple and hyper personalized to the customer? So that has always been the vision. And we started off with building a marketplace with a recommendation engine to connect existing products and sell it to the end user, to then realize that how far behind the industry is and how difficult it is to execute on it due to a number of challenges across the insurance supply chain. Fragmentation, the lack of technology that can integrate seamlessly all the way from reinsurance to distribution. So then we did a lot of R&D around what is the most appropriate technology and did some testing on the value of smart contracts and what is the purpose of smart contracts, and across the value chain, how we could utilize that piece of technology. And after a lot of experimentation and studying the market, I wanted to create something from the ground up. So we went back to the drawing board, and Hustle Cover was born off the back of just watching the market, speaking to a whole range of insurers and insurtechs around the world, and really looking at where is the future of work look like? Where is the world going? Where are the customers? What are some of the other big key trends that are happening in the industry that is shaping the market? So really looking at outside of the insurance industry, so retail, e-commerce, where the big trends are, and then looking at banking and fintech and where the trends are going. And the next obvious thing would be where insurance could go, even though in the incumbents are very much far behind to be able to design a proposition to deliver on the vision of serving for the gig economy, we had to create something from the ground up.
Wow, that's very, 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 very interesting. And before we go on, I just wanted to do a quick shout out to some people who are joining us online. So on LinkedIn, Sahid Onanuga, Jack Farren, Ebimowe, Otieno Inyanga. Hi, everyone. Richard Machomba. Thank you for joining us. So the two people who have spoken before now have said they stumbled on insurance. Well, I stumbled on insurance as well. I've heard, I mean, you've spoken on our podcast, but then I think that, I mean, your experience is the definition of stumbled on insurance. So yeah, share with us.
Yeah. And hi to everyone currently joining. Yeah, look, I literally pretty much share the same experience with pretty much everyone else on this panel. I also stumbled on insurance. I was completely foreign to the whole industry, completely foreign to the financial services as a whole. And that's actually what made me want to join, the fact that I've never actually had any experience in the financial services. Upon my joining, I was considering consulting or, you know, joining a bank, you know, but then I stumbled on insurance. And obviously you're aware of the story, Damola. I actually bumped into the co-founders on a train, and that's kind of that's kind of where the initial conversations of myself joining Pineapple really started. And, you know, then I found myself in an insurtech, and I felt like this is probably the best way for me to join, given my, you know, my historical passion for startups and entrepreneurship in general, as opposed to joining an existing big, large corporation. Why not join a small player that's trying to disrupt the industry? And that's really how I got into the insurance game.
Wow, that's very interesting. I mean, thank God we have trains here as well. So I think I'm going to jump on the next train to meet my, yeah. I need to disrupt. Is it the same for you, stumbling into insurance?
Yeah, I think that's just the right word. I stumbled on insurance when I was actually doing telemedicine, and I was traveling for a program in Geneva when I saw a couple of kids picking plastic. Then one of the things we realized was telemedicine was more like a convenient healthcare. Only the rich could afford it. But in our mind, we are trying to bridge the gap in healthcare, you know, financing, so people could consult doctor online. But we automatically neglected millions of people like this. So it was in Switzerland that I learned that for telemedicine to work, you actually need an insurance underwriter to, you know, embed it. So when I came back to Nigeria, I had practically no knowledge on insurance. So I had to take up a job with ARM Pension, which I believe was closer to insurance, since I couldn't get into insurance, to at least understand how the informal sector work on insurance. So practically, I had no experience in insurance, and I've never been in insurance before.
Wow, that's good. So, I mean, everyone listening, every one of us here, we don't have a background in insurance, but we are passionate about how we can take the insurance industry to the next level, right? And that is something that is quite exciting. And I'm sure that there's no one on this call who, I mean, yes, we are in short text, but then you're working with the core insurance industries in one way or another. So we're definitely working together, right? And so how can we build the space and grow it? And I mean, it was interesting that what you said there, Nonso, and maybe I want to stick with you there. You talked about, seeing that, when you traveled, looking at financial inclusion, I mean, this is something that, will I say the buzzword, is something that is in the conversation now and then, when you talk about financial inclusion, right? Insurance, generally is not usually in the conversation. You talk about financial inclusion, you say, bank accounts opened, and things like that, But, how can we change this, because at the end of the day, insurance is a huge tool and it's helpful.
Hi, my name is Joel Masharia. I'm the co-founder of Motisure, where we provide last mile distribution of microinsurance products. Keep listening to the InsurTech business series to get the latest on insurance and InsurTech within and outside of Africa.
Okay, thank you, Debola. I think, Richard Leafley, we always say, people don't wake up in the morning and go to the internet to buy insurance, but every day they face different forms of risk. So yeah. I think we have this idea around financial inclusion to be more financial products like credit, payment and savings, and people pay less attention on insurance and pension, which practically most of these services rest on this thing. Because when you look at it, there's a close relationship between insurance and economic development, apparently when you're trying to target low-income people segment in any country or economy. So if we are to create a complete narrative change in that narrative, we have to start looking at insurance more of an inclusion, not just as a side service. Because millions of people, from my experience, see insurance as a product for the rich, an expensive luxury, not what they need. But you realize that 85% of people are likely to go back into poverty if they don't have insurance, if there's no hedge to prevent them in case of risk. So I think it's high time we try to, create that mental shift around insurance. But for us to do this, we have to invest more in aggressive marketing and awareness marketing to bridge that gap in trust. Selling insurance is not more like a service. We should see it as we are selling trust, because that is the big problem with people. People find it difficult to understand insurance, probably when you're trying to communicate to unorganized informal sector, low education, lower disposable income. How do you explain this kind of service to someone? You need to create a solution that is tailored to his need so he could understand that I am likely to move into poverty if I don't make this decision. It's not just about saving money. It's not just about picking up a loan. I can pick a microcredit and something can happen and I can lose the entire service. So until you make people, have that complete mental shift, you can be able to deal with insurance. So I believe that creating that level of financial inclusion is not, we have to change that narrative from the angle of cash payments and credit and see insurance as more of an embedded solution that must go with these services.
Very, very interesting there. So I want to go to Joel. I know that you are also engaging, underserved markets, right, through Motisure. And also mentioned there about how we need to change the way that we, really talk about insurance and represent insurance to the market, especially if you are looking at getting more people insured in Africa, right? How are you doing that with Motisure? Especially looking at the fact that, you are quite specific, at least for now, what the market that you are serving, the border.
Yeah, so it's interesting what Nasana said, and I totally agree with him. And what we found out in our survey or in our research was the guys on the ground, which is the normal border guys, yeah. These are guys who have a very high.
Sorry, for the border, please explain what border. I know what it is.
By border, we mean like bike riders or guys on a motorcycle. Basically, they're carrying people or carrying food or couriers and those kind of things. So essentially, for most of them, they're very self-aware. That's the first thing. And most people underestimate, you know, the communication itself, right? So you notice with traditional products, the way they've been communicated in the industry previously, there's a disconnect between the end user and the guy who's providing the service, right? So that kind of creates a scenario where the end user thinks of that insurance product as a product that is not meant for them. So when we notice that, and when we talk to quite a number of these border guys or the riders, we basically figured two things. One, there will have to be a lot of education in terms of, you know, how you communicate the product. That's the first thing. Two, we looked at different ways of basically solving this. And the way we decided to go with is by embedding the insurance in already existing form points of sale, right? So think of a petrol station or just a fuel station, right? The guy has to use fuel every single day, right? For us, that becomes a distribution point. So what we do is that, you know, we go sit down with these guys and get our insurance product embedded on the cost of the fuel, right? So essentially the guy will accumulate it every day. He'll come and buy the, you know, the fuel, but then part of that cost of the fuel will go to him getting a daily cover that is specific for accidents, right? So for us, the play we've chosen to go with is the embedded way. And the reason for that is within mobility, you're targeting millions of people, right? So you want to make it as frictionless as possible. You don't want to have to over-communicate the solution. So what you do is you get the partner to onboard and then distribute on your behalf. So that in that way, you basically hit, you know, 10 million users within a very short span of time. And that kind of cascades down to the guys. Now, over a period of time, you'll slowly bring them on board and show them that, hey, this is something that you can actually do. And the reason as to why we've chosen the micro insurance play is to make it very affordable and very flexible, and only on demand do they get the insurance that they need. So that's sort of like our approach, the embedded play and in points of sale. So we're not reinventing any wheel here. We're just giving them it, you know, already things that they are using it on a normal day.
Yeah. Okay, Nabi, I mean, listening to some of these things about getting people who generally would have been excluded before, getting them insurance or protection that they need, and not just insurance, right? Protection that they need, because that's what exactly we're trying to do. How has that been for you, especially looking at the fact that you are serving the gig economy, and that's a growing space right now?
Yeah, so we are very much focused on embedding the product as well, but looking at the gig economy through the lens of what is the gig economy look like, and being able to identify where the customers are and what platforms do customers use. So if you look at the gig economy, you can dissect the market into sort of like the knowledge economy focused gig workers or independent contractors. Then you have sort of the trades kind of drivers and construction workers, all these kinds of stuff. So looking at the risk categories of knowledge workforce and the non-knowledge workforce, then looking at the platforms that these different segments use to earn an income, they're designing a product where we can leverage the data across those platforms to be able to provide a coverage to protect the income that is fluctuating over a period of time. And the nature of independent work is cash flow is tight, income is always fluctuating. But then to be able to provide coverage for the amount that people are earning as they're working through one hustle, two, three different side hustle across different platforms. And you can't really predict when an accident is going to happen. And also really looking at the type of accidents that a knowledge worker would experience versus a non-knowledge worker would experience. And building a community around that. So we do a lot of, you know, brand collaborations, building community, engaging community, community financial literacy and partnering with other platforms that are providing financial services, whether it's a tax platform or whether it's an accounting platform. And there are really interesting points of data that are being captured across these platforms that can be utilized to automatically underwrite directly onto those platforms to ensure the user. So to Joel's point, rather than trying to educate the users about, you know, the insurance, making the product simple and easy and to be able to consume at point of sale at whatever kind of, you know, platforms that they're leveraging as a version one. And as we grow and scale, we would like to see the solution to be available across markets and across jurisdictions. Because if you look at, for example, a platform like Fiverr, which is a global platform, but to be able to deploy a product that can cover everybody that uses the platform requires a whole range of compliance and governance and capacity organization across those markets, which is a very complex thing to endeavor. But that would be the holy grail in the future, to have a product and with an API that could plug into these platforms that could provide global coverage. But currently we have to go market after market, finding capacity and then rolling it out. But that is the most frictionless, seamless way to protect the creator economy or the passion economy or the gig economy.
That's interesting. And so Sizwe, right? All of these conversations that we've had so far, right, it's been about doing it differently, right? But then this different thing is being enabled by technology, really. You can't achieve all of this scale with what we currently are doing or what we've been doing before, at least pre-pandemic, right? From a technology point of view, I mean, how do we approach this? What has to change for us as insurers and even insurtechs?
So in terms of, I guess, just to answer that question of accessibility and how I guess technology plays a role in that, I think, and that was also the one thing that I know we spoke about in the podcast, the one thing technology definitely enables is access. And I know if you look at, I think there was Nonso who was mentioning earlier that insurance is still seen as this like this thing for, you know, the wealthier people to purchase. And I guess that makes sense in the numbers as well. I think if you look at insurance penetration across Africa, it's generally quite low, except for South Africa, where it's extremely, you know, high. But that is also, that is completely, you know, a result of the socioeconomic situation the country finds itself in, you know, given the historical circumstances of the country and the economic division, you know, that is there. If you look at, you know, the people who are insured versus not, even in South Africa, it's like a stark difference across economic lines. And, you know, the one thing that'll really solve that is technology and just access to it. And I think with a further penetration of that, there's so much opportunity to offer a lot of financial services and insurance products to, you know, your lower LSM, you know, to people who wouldn't otherwise have access to these functions, which is obviously what we're, you know, attempting to do at Pineapple. And, you know, there's such a big role that technology can play. I think even the advent of the capabilities of the technology itself. So for example, your cell phone can give you so much data. Like, you know, you've got location-based data, you've got, you know, your gyroscope battery. There's so many, so much alternative data one can actually capture from the device that you can perform different functions. You can, you know, essentially innovate different functions of your financial services. So you can, you know, disrupt things like, you know, underwriting. You know, you can disrupt a lot of, you know, things like, yeah, so underwriting, things. There's just so many other decisions that you can make based off a lot of the alternative data that one can collect that can inherently disrupt the insurance industry and financial services as a whole. And, you know, you don't necessarily have to prejudice someone based off factors that are out of their control, which is, you know, the story of Africa, you know, like, you know, and it, I know in South Africa, it's definitely a big thing. Like, you can be prejudiced based off where you live or, you know, your economic situation, which is really not your fault. It's just kind of the situation you find yourself born into because of the history of the country, you know, and you know, so I think there's so much opportunity that technology can play in that regard, just in reshaping the industry, specifically, you know, on the African continent.
Yeah, thank you very much for that. Sticking on the point about the customer, right? I think that one of the things that I have also seen around the world is the need for us to focus on being more customer centric, right? And you know, starting from the customer, what exactly works for the customer, and then building a product that has not been what was before. Maybe I'll start with Nabi. In terms of engaging the gig economy, is there a lot of understanding of that space that the industry needs to do, or some of the products that we have right now, we just need to tweak them, you know, to serve this market?
It is evolving, like from a customer's perspective, customers don't understand that it is possible for a product like this to exist. So when they come across our product, they're often kind of shocked that it does exist. And then also customers don't realize that they need the product, that it could happen, that a product could exist. So then if you look at the common products of a self-employed person is generally around business insurance, you know, public liability, professional indemnity. And there's a whole bunch of things that self-employed people will have to look at to keep their businesses running and really think about themselves around their own financial well-being, you know, preparing for an unforeseen circumstances. Do they have enough money to tackle a shock or absorb shock in the event something like that would happen? And then also planning for the future and retirement and savings and all of these kinds of things. Because those aspects in the corporate world is generally a function of HR, would then really take care of that. But once you become self-employed, on top of running your own business, now you have the burden of really thinking about, okay, I need to pay for my retirement, I need to protect my income. So it becomes like it's a lot for an individual to do. So then when they come across a product, people feel relieved to know that these solutions are coming to the market. And there is a lot of positive sentiment around the creation of a product like Hustle Cover. And it's still very early days in market adoption. So if we look at the gig economy and the life span of gig economy is only about 10 years old, the new gig economy. But if we look at self-employment, is not a new sector. Self-employment and entrepreneurship has existed for a long time. The difference is in the last 10 years, there has been this massive shift powered by technology, powered by big tech, that have kind of democratized the rise of entrepreneurship, that allows people to, you know, start selling and monetizing their passion through TikTok or Instagram, or, you know, sell things on e-commerce. So we've seen this massive rise of self-employment and micro entrepreneurship, where one person can quit their job and have this lifestyle business. And MasterCard predicts that the gig economy or the passion economy is going to be more than 50% of the global workforce. Now, this is a shift that we have not seen in our lifetime in the workforce or future of work. So that's very interesting. And I think we will see a lot more happening in banking and finance, specifically looking at the passion economy, creator economy, and the gig economy across the board in, you know, all different markets, because all the different markets operate slightly in unique different ways with little, you know, subtleties and nuances, but the core problems are the same.
Hello, this is Pat Callahan, the insurance elephant, calling from near Buffalo, New York, about 5,300 miles from Lagos. I enjoy listening to the InsurTech Business Series, Without It Amolo Loco, because it proves that even though we are thousands of miles different, the insurance business is not that much different. The concepts and topics that are covered on the InsurTech Business Series, they could be handled the same way right here in Western New York State. So listen in. It's a great podcast, great global and local guests, and it just proves it's a small world for insurance.
Yeah, true, true. That's a huge number there from that you said from MasterCard. So, Joel, how much of let's say human-centered design do we need to employ as we are looking to serve more Africans, right? Level of penetration, as you know, is about, across the continent, is about 3%. So if you look at each market, like Tizwe mentioned, Tizwe, South Africa is the outlier. But how do we go about this differently? Because with the numbers at 3%, it means that maybe the product has not worked or something. I don't know.
I mean, like, look, this is a tough one, right? And clearly, no one has figured it out yet, right? So, but from where we sit, right, we have a couple of opinions, right? First, traditional products have to change. That's the first thing. Two, the whole approach to risk from where we stand has to change, like how we look at risk, you know, how you underwrite risk and all that. From policies and regulations as well, right? That has to, people have to look at it from a different angle, right? And the way we're thinking about it and the way we're engaging the market and even the players in the industry is by saying, hey, we have to look at the customer first. Before you even come up with regulations, before you come up with products, you have to go sit down with your customers, right? Now, I see a lot of players coming in and, you know, copy-pasting solutions from all over the place. I mean, it's not going to work. Like, the African people they're unique in so many different ways from the behaviors, right? If you look at, like, consumer behavior in Africa, it's a bit different from the Western world, right? So you're not going to create a solution seated somewhere in a desk and then hope that it's going to be adopted very quickly in the marketplace. So we have to go back to the people that we want to sell the insurance to. You know, like, look at what are their pain points, right? Like, look at the pain, you know, the pain relievers and all those, you know, value proposition angles or the canvas, if you have to call it that, and say, how can we really, like, truly look at solving your problem, right? Like, that's how I look at it. And we're saying that we might not be the best people to advise on this, but then from where we are sitting and from the traction you're getting in the market based on how we are approaching it, it's something is working when you reverse engineer the solution, right? So you go sit down with the customer, figure out what the pain points are, see if you can work out something with them first, and then come back and sit down, create a solution, you know, get the underwriters in place. And that's what I'm saying, like, it's going to be a very interesting couple of years, because what you're finding is that traditional insurance companies are not very interested in very innovative products, right? We struggle to get, you know, local guys to basically underwrite some of the things that you're playing around with. So what you're going to find is that insurtechs are quickly going to jump a hoop and go work directly with reinsurance companies, right? And that if you combine the micro insurance approach to with technology and a human-centered design, where you're starting with the customer first, I believe that the kind of numbers we'll be looking at in another couple of years is unlike anything seen before in any other continent. And that's where we're coming from. And that's how we're approaching this whole solution.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you very much for that. And I mean, when you're looking at, you know, inclusion in the African continent, I think that Kenya has done a lot of work, especially when you talk about M-Pesa and how that has really helped to get more people into the financial bracket and things like that. So, still looking at putting the customer first. I know that so for social care, you are helping people to, I mean, the Yep. Literally buying health insurance with recyclables. That's an interesting combination, and it's different, and it's not something that is in the market, right? So how is that conversation going, especially looking at the fact that you are not going to underwrite it yourself? You have to engage insurance companies, and I mean, the existing products demand that you pay a premium, physical premium, other than recyclables.
Well, I think when you try to serve different markets, you try to understand their individual needs. When you try to serve a market like Africa, where poverty is widespread and lots of people earn less than $100 a month in terms of income, and disposable income is very small, you have to look at not just designing the product, but how can you look at affordability? Can people be able to pay for this? Because I said earlier, to millions of people who even go to bed without meal, this is like a luxury. You know, they don't really need it. They just want to have this basic need of food and shelter. But you could come up and say, okay, this product, you basically need this because you're likely to further move into poverty if you don't have this. But I'm not going to charge you money for this. I'm going to give you an alternative to pay for this instead of paying for with cash. Now, for example, we are having a conversation with about 16 to 18,000 farmers. These people have products, and their products are likely to perish because of post-harvest loss. So because of post-harvest loss, the agricultural products are likely to perish. So what you need to do is to find an off-taker for agricultural products so they don't have to pay cash, but they can use their products. So by this way, you create alternative ways of allowing people to pay for insurance services without having to pay cash. You create by taking off their products from them, either with, like, for example, we do with recyclables, where you give us recyclables, we sell these recyclables and we convert the proceeds into headphones to enable people also have the same value that someone at the middle class will have. So it's just about understanding people and their individual needs and trying to tailor it to their needs.
Yeah, that's interesting. And, you know, I think that there was a conversation I was having some time ago as regards the United Nations SDGs and the approach that insurance companies or, you know, companies generally should have towards that. But looking at the insurance industry, you know, in my mind, you know, I was thinking that, okay, is it an approach where we are saying that you want to take a humanitarian approach, right? Or you want to, you know, commercialize it, right? Because at the end of the day, I mean, the goal is to get more people the protection that they need, you know, no poverty, you know, zero hunger, you know, and things like that. From your work with some of these parastatals and some of the engagement that you're having as well, I don't know, maybe Nabi can also help here. From your engagement, what's the approach in doing this?
Okay, I thought you were referring to that. Okay, I think one of the things I learned earlier was we understand that, like in Nigeria, most states are rolling out basic health insurance, you know, across states. But it's easy to roll out insurance in a state because you have people working in that state and they're employed by government. You just deduct their salary by providing insurance. But what about the millions of people in the unorganized informal sector who live below poverty? It's quite hard to provide insurance for this kind of people. So for us, that's where we come in. We give them alternative. Environments are dirty, you know. Like what we are doing in Kaduna State, the state is dirty, people drink salt water, they dump it in the street, they consume plastic parts, dump it in the street. We could take up these things from you and we could set up collection bins across states and we could collect plastics and we could sell this plastic and use the proceeds to finance insurance for people. Because when these plastics block waterways, they turn to breeding ground for mosquitoes, which again causes malaria. So this way, it doesn't bring economic costs on the state. Environment is promoted and health inclusion is guaranteed. So it costs nothing and you see sustainability around it. You know, you try to finance something using something that is absolutely not there. So this way, I think it's just about understanding a need and trying to capitalize on that, you know, helping people find alternative ways of financing it instead of putting the financial, a strong financial burden on them.
So, I mean, Nabi, is the SDG something that we really need to put in, in our minds when we are even creating these new products for these new markets?
I think, you know, the Australian market is quite interesting for the product. So we looked at Australian market versus even the US market for a product like health insurance. Australia has a very strong government-led infrastructure in providing health insurance, and there is this kind of safety net that is provided. But in the markets where there isn't a very strong social infrastructure, the need for products like that are more important. But the interesting thing about the Australian market here is in health insurance, we have, you know, our private health insurance. Then we also have the public health insurance, which is called Medicare. And then there are gaps in the coverage neither the public or the private sector covers. So we're seeing in the market the gaps around, for example, very specific women's health insurance is not covered or is not affordable for people that actually need it. For example, and then very specific, you know, mental health insurance. So we're seeing this new micro segments that are exposed, which are incredibly valuable. And another way to think about that is the health insurance, even for a developed nation like Australia, is very much built on the philosophy of cure rather than prevention, rather than a holistic well-being and investing into making sure that you're living a sustainable, healthy lifestyle, and rather than, you know, let's pay for things when things go wrong. And in Australia, you have this community rating structure where the healthier population offsets the unhealthy population, and then shifting that to a personalized insurance model. If would that happen? And if it did, what would that look like? Because a lot of the younger people don't want to pay for insurance because you're paying for the same kind of premium where you don't have to really lodge a claim. So those shifts we haven't seen happen much yet, but we're seeing there's huge opportunity for those products to kind of be dismantled and turn into micro products that are hyper personalized to an individual, and then to provide the coverage. Because we live in a world where we have access to so much data to be able to create products like that. So there is no excuse not to be able to do that, to leverage the data to say, okay, this is the kind of insurance that somebody would need. And rather than punishing people for disclosing their lifestyle, to incentivize people to engage in behaviors that is going to increase the longevity, because we know that the life expectancy of our generation and future is going to go, you know, up to 100 years or more. And if we're designing a product for a lifespan of 100 years, we cannot use a model that has been designed for 30 years or 60 years of life expectancy. And that's where kind of the product design sits right now. And that needs a big shift. And I believe in different markets, you know, the problems are different when we look at it, but the life expectancy or the health and well-being are kind of changing a lot. People are taking personal responsibility in living a healthier, more balanced kind of lifestyle, and therefore the insurance product design needs to change to suit that.
Yeah, that's quite interesting. And I mean, I like that point that you made, and I'm going to speak with Sizwe. When you look at, you know, the approach moving from, being reactive to being preventive, right? You know, the one that comes to mind is Vitality, right? And what they are doing and how, you know, people are willingly, happily going to, you know, release all of this data. And basically, they are creating a product around helping people to be, you know, live better lives, and which in turn, I mean, less claims, and then they are creating loyalty as well for the customers, right? it's quite interesting what that is being done. And at the center of all of this is having a mobile mindset, right? Some of these things not being, you know, static, but being able to be nimble and simple and, you know, maybe through an app or through, you know, device, maybe a watch, you know, and things like that. You know, it's a mobile-centric way of designing products or engaging customers, something that we need to, you know, put in front as well as we, you know, look to serve new markets.
Yeah, I mean, look, in the 21st century, it's probably a good idea to do that. Yeah, look, as you've mentioned, I think they're doing some great stuff on that front. If you look at, you know, the likes of Vitality, there is so much, obviously, as mentioned earlier, there's so much that one can do by taking advantage of the technology that we have disposable to us. Like you have programs like that, not just making use of your phone, but even like, you know, your watch. That also has some health properties as well, can tell your heart rate, et cetera. Using all those factors to essentially create other products, which can essentially like supplement your cover or anything along those lines. I think with the advent of technology and the further penetration of it, there's so much opportunity that one can actually start doing there. And I think a lot of, companies are actually realizing that, and they're starting to put out a lot of products that, you know, kind of center around that. As you say, I think one thing that shouldn't be forgotten that while developing all these products is never ever forget, you know, to actually think about the user's problems, you know, and just focus on, you know, any of the pain points that the users may have in terms of them consuming your products and them, essentially being covered, you know, via any of the products that, you know, these companies have offered, and, you know, just to kind of keep that in mind when developing those type of products, because that can definitely be easily forgotten. So I think that should definitely be, you know, kind of front in mind, and, you know, making use of the technology that is available to us. Being mobile centric, I guess, you know, I think mobile is what dominates right now. You know, I think, you know, a couple of years ago, that wouldn't have been the case, but right now that is definitely the case. And, you know, just keeping that kind of, you know, front of mind, focusing on a mobile centric, product delivering is probably the best choice that one could make in 2021.
Yeah. Quite interesting what you said, and thank you for that. So in terms of engaging with insurers, right? Because I mean, well, at this point, no one here is an insurer itself, right? So in terms of engaging insurers who underwrite this risk, so I'll start with Sizwell from the Pineapple point of view. What has been the experience, and what do you think that needs to change in terms of how they are seeing insurtech?
So, from an insurtech point of view, I guess, from an insurtech point of view, you know, like we like most other insurtechs are partners with your bigger, more established companies, who we essentially, you know, kind of rolling our products along with them. I think what a lot of the position your bigger companies generally find themselves in is that they are actually operating a business which they've been running for many years, you know, some much longer than others, but it's a proven formula, you know, and from their point of view, they wouldn't want to change what is already working. And I think, I mean, you can't blame them. I mean, speaking from a business point of view, why would you want to change something that's already working so well to the point where, you know, they're this large corporation? And I think that's what makes it harder to innovate, and perhaps maybe a bit more, maybe you might find a little bit more reluctancy to kind of adapt with what is coming. But I think that's obviously where a lot of these companies will then choose to partner with your newcomers, you know, the likes of your Pineapples, and, you know, kind of collaborate with them to kind of, you know, move with the times and kind of see where the market is going, but at the same time, still being able to maintain the existing business that they have that's working. Obviously, we don't know for how long it'll work, but I mean, right now it's still working. And I think, I think that's kind of the strategy a lot of them are kind of taking. If not partnering up with InsurTech, perhaps maybe they'll try and establish some sort of, new product or new offering, which is more mobile centric and more focused on your, how things are, today in 2021, and kind of trying to innovate from there. But it gets very difficult to kind of focus on that. If this book that you have over here is bringing you, this much revenue, and you've got this big giant thing giving you all this revenue, you're probably not going to put as much focus in this one than over here. And that's what makes it quite difficult for the corporates, obviously, to kind of move and be nimble in that regard with the new market that we find ourselves in. But I guess that's where us InsurTechs kind of come into play, and that's where a lot of those partnerships happen. So that's really been our experience, and I think that this really works well. And I think we'll be seeing a lot more of it, in the future of the insurance industry.
For Joel, what has been your experience in terms of engaging the insurers who you definitely are working with? Is it same, or what do you think we can change?
I have to be careful what I say because I'm them here. But what I'm gonna say is data is it's kind of king when it comes to decision making on some of these things. And what you're saying, like if you look at even the European markets, look at the US markets in terms of insurance, there's a huge shift of insurtech companies, quickly disrupting a segment that was predominantly traditional. And the way some of them have been able to work out that is by, skipping that step, as I said earlier, of the insurer, right? Like the insurance itself, and jumping to the guys who actually underwrite the actual risk, right? That's the reinsurance companies, right? So I'll give an example. If you're doing medical, you can choose not to go through company A and go to Swiss Re or Munich Re or whoever directly, right? And what you're noticing is that the reinsurance guys have seen where the future is going, right? And they've started collaborating with some of these insurtech companies to push products that cater for what their users are, right? Remember, there's so many dynamics here. You have to look at the age gap, right? Like if you look at traditional insurance companies, right? Anyone over 35 and above kind of fits into the customer persona of most of the existing products. But then you look at that generational shift that's happening right now with the, Generation Z or millennials and them coming of age, starting to work and then realizing hey, wait, why am I paying $500 per year for medical cover and me, I never get sick, right? I need something at $50, at the point of need, right? So now insurer will not change their policies, right? Like they are kind of like a monster in the sense of, they're not very adaptive to change. But then as we said, it's because it's been working, right? You're not going to fix something that is not broken. So essentially what's going to happen is, and that's from my own point of view, is most insurtechs are going to be very disruptive, are going to skip that step. And for the insurance companies that are very, very ahead of the curve when it comes to innovation, they're going to embrace the insurtechs and partner with them and create them as a distribution channel for their product. So that's what I see as I could be wrong, but then that's what I see is going to happen in the next 3-4 years. And, our own case is an example of that, right? Like we had to skip the local guys because they told us it's going to take 18 months to create a product, right? Mm-hmm. Customer needs a product yesterday, right? You are going to wait for 18 months. So you skip to the guy who actually makes that decision and they create a product for you within a month, right? So it's kind of huge, right? And but then, it depends with, different policies, different structures and systems that have been put in place over time.
Yeah.
How do you form that decision?
Interesting points that you mentioned there. So Nabi, how has that engagement been, especially with insurers? I know you mentioned earlier about what you started with and how the product has changed, but how has your engagement been, and what do you think that we can necessarily change?
I think in the Australian market has been slow from the incumbent side in terms of working with InsurTechs in creating new products. We're seeing a lot happening this year in the Australian market, which is a really great sign, where insurers are partnering with InsurTechs across the board in creating new products, whether it's commercial insurance or personal lines, and other verticals as well. So we're seeing a lot happening in the Australian market, which is a really good sign. The thing with the industry is designing a product, getting a product up and running, it takes a long time because the insurers work very slowly. The structures are very different. So that is consistently the number one challenge, is finding the right partner. The lead time to find the right partner to create a insurance program together could take at least a year. So time to market is very long in creating product. But once you find the right partner, then it becomes a lot easier. So for new InsurTechs that are getting into the market, I think having very strong relationships with the insurers is really critical, because unless you cannot be in the market on your own, you have to partner with the supply chain of the insurance world. And therefore you need to find the right partner that understands the product that you're developing and designing, has the similar kind of innovation culture inside the organization to be able to create and iterate. What we found the biggest challenge was insurers do not have a mindset of iteration. It is very black and white. We create it today and therefore it cannot change. Doesn't have this mindset of test, learn, improve, that a product needs to be constantly evolving rather than we create a product today and forget it for the next 200 years. And the culture isn't there, and therefore finding smaller, more nimble, more innovative groups are challenging. And also having CEOs or the board with the right direction. So a lot of the major insurers, the innovation agenda is more around, let's find better claims technology, let's find better lead generation, let's save some more costs, rather than how do we create new products? So it's very much let's optimize bottom line rather than looking at new segments, looking at emerging segments. So there is this massive disconnect between, and I think to previous points of Shizwe as well, is if you have a book of business that is working really well, why change, right? So there is this like tension inside the organization, even though they see the need. There might be a board's direction that says, you know, okay, innovation for 2021 is maybe we move this part of the business to the cloud, or, you know, maybe we find a better underwriting system. So it's like incremental micro improvements to maybe, you know, move the needle a little bit, but for that business, that could be millions of dollars in savings, right? But it doesn't really move the needle in the market in terms of innovation. So I think it just operates in like two different worlds of what innovation means. So there is this real big disconnect. Having said that, there are some very innovative, I think reinsurers are ahead of the curve in terms of working with startups or designing programs or having corporate venture capital arms that not only invest in businesses that kind of supports existing incumbents, but also create new business and creates emerging products for emerging markets and emerging segments. And and there are lots of, you know, case studies around the world with all of the reinsurers. We can just, you know, give lots of examples of how that has happened, but not a lot of the primary insurers that we can say it has been, you know, pushing the agenda for creating new products.
That's quite interesting. So what has been your experience engaging with insurers? I mean, looking at what you're trying to do in the market as well. You're on mute.
All right. Well, I think the conversation earlier when we started, it was a bit difficult because you have to find an insurer on the writer, you have to pitch the underwriter what you want to do, and you also have to look at the risk implication. Nobody wants to carry significant burden on the writing, importantly when you're trying to serve the low-income people who are likely to be sick. So these are things, I think working with underwriters has to do with, it's more of shared value because people, underwriters are also looking at distributing the policies and they want to distribute a policy, but at a very low cost. So if you could come up with a solution that could help them to distribute this policy at a very low cost, it's going to be a win, sustainable solution that is win-win for you, for the business and them and the entire ecosystem. But it's just all about coming together and sitting down with the writers, you know, letting them know your pinpoint and them understanding where you're going in the long term. But I think all that being equal, everything is okay.
Right, that's great. I mean, it's been quite interesting hearing from you, Nabi, Sizwe, Joel, Nonso. I had a very interesting conversation so far. And I mean, I don't want it to be like I'm the only one asking the questions. So, I mean, let's hear from our audience and see, I mean, what questions do they have and what comments they have. So, I mean, thank you from my end for sharing as much as you did. And I'll switch to Folumi now to take questions.
All right. So I think this question really is for Nonso. So Anagosh actually says that insurance is not just for the rich, it's to protect the poor and the ones who are on the borderline of poverty, especially in a COVID situation. Yeah. Right. So how do you make the poor understand this important point? So how have you been able to push social care to a lot of people that are financially excluded, especially in Nigeria or generally Africa, where a lot of people don't see the relevance of insurance?
Okay, thank you for the question. I think one of the things you have to understand about insurance is that you're not selling a service, you are selling trust. You know, this is the period you're asking somebody to pay you for trust. So people are paying for that trust. They want to understand that I'm giving you the little money that I have, you know, in case something happens, you could be able to come in and assist me. So for us, when we started social care, the idea was I saw a couple of kids picking plastics, you know, because their mom, obviously they had a little boy that was sick and they had to pick those plastics so they could give it to their mom to sell it so that their mom would give it to a person who says HAB. In exchange, the person will take the plastics and be able to give their mom some herbs to say, take care of their sick brother. So I think that's a question of that level of trust again, because they're exchanging value, more of barter system. So what we do as social care and to reach more people is to sell that level of trust, because people don't have money and you want to engage them to have access to health inclusion. So you're asking them to give me your rubbish. An average human being generates about 3 to 4 kilograms of waste every day, of which over 85% of them are recyclable. So you're convincing this person to give me your waste, and with your waste, you can have access to healthcare anytime you need it. I can give you access to quality hospitals, and you could go there and get quality healthcare. So because it costs him nothing besides something that's a burden he generates in his house, he doesn't see it as a burden, you know, exchanging it for access to quality healthcare. You know, the thing has a ripple effect, because when someone can use his rubbish to access healthcare, on the long run, he wants to come back. And even though he doesn't have rubbish, he wants to pay with cash because he has the confidence that this model is working and is providing him security. So it's just all about finding alternative ways of engaging people and creating awareness. Importantly, using local community people to let more people know the benefit of access to quality healthcare.
Thank you very much. So I think our discussion would really just go to Nabi, right? So Anu also asking that, so we talked about, you know, income protection for, you know, hustlers, basically. So how exactly do you prevent the anti-selection in such, you know, income protection cases, especially for workers who take up seasonal hustles? How do you go about that?
Could you repeat the last part again, please?
All right. So what I said was, in terms of anti-selection, right, for your income protection product, how exactly do you prevent anti-selections from, you know, a lot of hustlers, or should I say a lot of gig workers that take up, you know, seasonal gigs, not necessarily something that run concurrently?
Yeah, so the way that the product is designed currently is based on so a whole range of occupation classes and platforms. So that's the initial way we looked at the product design and then split it into the knowledge economy and the non-knowledge economy and broadly covering them at a really high level rather than at a very granular level. And then looking at how the insurers classify the risk categories based on income protection, on historical data for a corporate world as a way of the core foundation of the product design. And over time, because it's a new product, there's not a lot of data or claims data on this specific segment. But if we look at the corporate sector, income protection has existed for a very long time. So there is a foundation to base some hypothesis on. And for us, it is to learn as we collect more data and look at the various different nuances to then inform, you know, better pricing, maybe better risk selection. And it's all to be discovered because it's a new emerging market. There's not a lot of data that's available. So you have to have a reference point of some data from the existing claims data and then triangulate the data with the new data that's coming in and then learn and observe what it could be. So that's how we look at it rather than this is what we're going to build predictive models to be able to build any kind of that granular level of modeling. We need actual data over a period of time with a whole range of claims coming through and then dissect into the data to then really look at it from a social science lens, right? Like why does one category is a certain type of risk versus another category that is a certain type of risk? Then there is the overlap of, let's say, I might be an Uber driver, but I am also a software engineer, right? And if that is the case, how much of my time am I driving for Uber versus how much of my time am I sitting at my desk? And therefore, what is the impact on my health and what is the likelihood of an accident happening and what does that accident look like, right? So a common theme could be, so like from a traditional insurer's perspective, they would classify it as you're high risk if you're driving a car. And the insurance model is built on insuring the asset rather than the behavioral traits or insuring the human being, right? And we believe that is the way the product should be designed based on the human being because that determines their holistic well-being. So like I could say, you know, burnout or mental health is a much higher risk that is also directly correlated to having an accident and getting that deeper understanding. So we use a framework of, you know, some sociological frameworks and psychological frameworks and personality construct theoretical frameworks that underpins the way we think about the product, the way we think about the user, and what are the life events that they're involved in that could provide a whole kind of risk lens of that person. But these are all evolving and it's still very new. So super exciting to see how these frameworks would provide the results of, hey, does it provide more accurate pricing? Can we shift the needle on the number of claims or the type of claims and provide the right coverage for the right person and design profitable products at the same time?
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I that's obviously answers majority of the question. And I think that it's really important, like you said, to look at, you know, the other part of the risk and not necessarily just the asset alone. So thank you. I would like to ask this with this or do this for everyone because majority of us here really don't have insurance background. But then I would just like to ask Sizwe, this particular question. So I have Umbuso Madida asking that what are the different ways of, you know, going into insurance? So I'm guessing that this particular person wants to understand how it is to move from, you know, whatever industry is right now to insurance industry. So what would be your best advice to Umbuso?
Well, I mean, there is no set formula, I guess, for it. I think pretty much the first thing that's very important is to want to go into the industry. I think that's definitely helpful. You don't want to find yourself going there under the, you know, with the mindset of actually not wanting to actually be there. It's just like a second thought or something. I think it's very important to actually want to go into the industry, to have a sense of curiosity about it, to find out kind of more about it. I know that's how I ended up in it. For me, it was the financial services in general. You know, also having moved to Johannesburg, which is the economic hub of South Africa, dominated by the financial services. So I really had a big interest in it. So I made the move into there. What also, I you know, given my interest, I also just did a lot of research. I had a lot of peers who were in the industry as well, just to find out kind of more, kind of, you know, what it entails, what it's like working there. I was able to see, you know, a lot of friends and colleagues who are actually in the industry, you know, just how their lifestyles are, how they're working there, how they're finding it, the conversations they have. So I was very curious on that sense. So I think that's one of the key things. If you do want to go into insurance or the financial services, you know, start off by being very curious about it and actually wanting to get in. And I guess from that, everything else will develop. You know, if you want to learn more about it, go out, learn more about it, do some research, do some readings. I know for me, specifically with insurance, the one thing that did pique my interest in it, even before my working days, was when I was a student. A lot of my friends are studying actuarial science, which obviously is, you know, very, that degree kind of takes you into insurance as a whole. And that was also something that really piqued my interest. Obviously myself, I did computer science, but I shared a lot of classes with them, you know, like maths and stats, etc. But it was always a thing, you know, actuarial science, it's the most difficult degree, it's the toughest thing, you know. So, you know, for me, joining the industry was also like, yeah, I'm getting into the industry of actuaries and to actually see, you know, what it's like to work within this industry that's been so hyped up so much. So it definitely, my interest definitely, you know, was built by things like that. So I think above everything, I think you really just have like a very keen interest in it, because obviously when you do attempt to get into the industry, you will encounter people who are, you know, well-versed in the industry. The conversations you'll have, the questions you'll get through your general experiences, job applications, meetings, etc., will really revolve around that. So I think having a keen interest in the industry is very important, even if you're outside, just to wonder how it is inside and just to find out, you know, how things are there. So, yeah, I think that's pretty much really what I'd say. Just have a really strong interest for it. And, yeah, I think the rest should just sort itself out naturally.
Absolutely important. Like that's actually one of the key ways to penetrate the insurance industry. It has to start from interest, basically. Thank you very much. So before I let everyone go, this is one last question, but I'd have everyone answer this question the best way they can. So yeah, again, we're having Anu ask that, you know, other than finance and funding, what solutions are your respective companies looking for to scale up? So I'll start with Sizwe and then we can move on from there. So you, Sizwe, what is the next best thing for Pineapple?
Hey, we're trying to become a unicorn, man. look, our focus, definitely, we're just trying to, you know, we're really trying to just punt growth. We're really seriously focused on growth, starting here now in South Africa. We just really want to really grow the brand, you know, want to become a household name. We really want to usher in that new era of insurance, you know, on the continent. So we really, really focus on just, you know, content growth at the moment. That's just our main focus. We just really want to grow and just, you know, dedicate ourselves to just serving, you know, the you know, South Africa, and, you know, hopefully in future expand throughout the continent and service Africa as well. But yeah, that's really where our focus is right now. We just want to become that household name. We really want to, you know, serve and dedicate ourselves to our users, always putting the customer first, and just really strive to just, you know, just deliver like awesome products. And there's a lot of things in the pipeline. Won't speak about them now, but sure you'll hear or see about them in the near future. So yeah.
Thank you very much, Sizwe. Now to Nabi, what's the next best thing for Cover here?
I think, you know, becoming the world's number one brand for the gig economy, for Hustle, and for that brand to be recognized as the go-to brand for entrepreneurs all around the world, and achieving that goal, and next year to launch our product in the US market, which is something that we've been preparing for a while, and then for it to be available across the globe, because that is the nature of self-employment, you know, global nomads traveling all around the world and working from anywhere in the world, to have that protection and coverage and your insurance can move around with you regardless of where you are, is what we really want to accomplish. And then to have the strong brand value, you know, the same level as, you know, like a Stripe or a Slack or what these big brands that have, you know, built something and known for what they do, and then do that better than anybody else.
Thank you very much, Nabi. Good luck with that. All right, so I'll move on to Joel. So, Joel, what's the next best thing for Multisure? Of course, now you're in BIMA, the second accelerator program, but what's the next thing that you're looking to achieve with Multisure?
I think for us is strengthening partnerships across fellow insurtech companies. And working with, I want to even thank one of the best teams that I have here in Kenya, that is insurance company, that's sort of like our pre-insurance guys, and is APA as well. So for me, it's mostly partnerships to scale the business and to cover as many Kenyans, Africans, as we can with our focus. And we are happy to say that, you know, we've gotten so much traction and the demand is crazy. So we hope to, again, follow Pineapple being the next unicorn as well. So watch out for that.
Awesome. I like the fact that all of you are looking to be the next unicorn. I mean, of course, again, good luck with that. And finally, for Nonso, what's are you looking to do with SusuCare? I know that you're playing actively in the health insurance space, but are you looking to upscale from that particular industry?
Sorry. Yeah, we are hoping to do so many things, but importantly, to ensure our mission is practically to ensure that everyone have access to quality healthcare, irrespective of their socioeconomic condition. So we started with recyclables. Now we are looking at agricultural products because we understand the need of on post-harvest loss. So our goal is to focus more on growth, on partnerships, and be able to find alternative ways of financing healthcare. And hopefully to be a unicorn like Sishu.
This has to be the catchword today. If there's anything I picked up from this conversation, has to be the unicorn, the next unicorns. All right, thank you very much, Nonso. So,
thank you.
I'll pass the conversation now to Damola to you know, close up this. We are about 2 minutes into the end of this conversation. So, Damola, over to you.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's been an interesting conversation so far, and we definitely want to say thank you to everyone who has joined. Firstly, the audience, a lot of comments, a lot of questions, and I want to say to our panelists, maybe afterwards, maybe you can just jump in there and maybe you know, share your thoughts and comments, answer some of those questions if you can. There are a lot of some comments. There's this comment from Emeka Kwiwu, and he says that Joel makes a good point. I think your point as regards going directly to reinsurer makes a good point. However, in my opinion, it's likely to be the broker segment of the market that would face a bigger challenge in this equation as opposed to cutting out insurers entirely. You know, Nelson Kiwaji is saying, I commend the good work you're doing. You know, I mean, Uganda, and we've worked with 3 microinsurance instances. The key challenges identified, among others, are education and awareness, distribution, the claim ratio and subscriber retention. Another note, the pandemic has caused a lot of unemployment. We need products that can cover the retrenched for at least 3 months. I think income protection, like NABI is trying to push, I think that works in that space as well. So a lot of comments. So please, afterwards, if you could just jump in and share your thoughts.